And so, yeah, and then there's a concept of everything's hackable, right? Everything's hackable in one way or another. And so how do you know what the program that you're allowing to be uploaded into your body, what's really in it? Who really has ultimate control? What could they do with it? Who could hack it? It's, again, this is just an enormous topic.
Episode of the Sharping Report. I'm your host, Sam Johnston. You're found on YouTube, iTunes, Blog Talk, and you can find me at Twitter at Sam T. Johnston. And before we start the show today, I just wanted to say, as the YouTube channel grows and as Sharping Report grows, I just want to say I really appreciate everyone out there listening. A lot of hosts like to say that they couldn't do it without their listeners, and that's really just not true. The only way I can do this is because God allows me to, but I will say it is a whole lot more fun doing it when people are actually listening, and the community that we've started to form is really something special, and I just want to take some time and say thank you for that. I love talking to you guys in the comments, and hopefully coming up, YouTube just started this new feature where I can actually premiere a video, and then it's like it's watching it live, so I can jump in the comments and have a live chat with you guys as the show goes on. So hopefully that's something we do in the future, so keep an eye out for that. But that's not what we're talking about today. Today we are talking about, well, the rise of technology. It's really been an interesting couple of years and a couple of decades with the integration of technology throughout our culture and throughout our world, with some crazy things going on that has really benefited our lives, but also some things that maybe many people don't know about that are substantially a huge threat coming up. So we just need to be aware about that. And joining us today to talk about those is Ken Ami. He is a researcher and author. I've had him on the show before about a year ago, and we talked about Aleister Crowley. So definitely go take a look at that. But yeah, technology has been something that's been really, you know, it's in our everyday lives. Some of us can't leave the house without our cell phone. And it seems like it's one step away from being implanted into our bodies. There's even companies out there right now requiring you to take a chip to work for them. We have a AI robot getting citizenship in countries, so it has become extremely crucial that we understand what is God's plan in this and what is Satan's plan in this, and what are we supposed to do to help God's plan and stop Satan's plan. So without further ado, Ken, how are you doing today?
I am doing wonderfully. I am saved by grace, and that's where I stand today.
Yeah, we've had, oddly enough, we'd have some technical issues today to get the program going. So that it's a good theme, I guess. It's a little frustrating, but a good theme. So one thing I know that you want to start out with, maybe just, it's interesting how our world continues in cycles. Many people say we're living in a time that's not like any other in our entire world, but there's such a large cycle to our history that a lot of this stuff has already kind of happened in the past, starting way back with Adam and Genesis. And so I know you maybe want to start in that time frame before we get too much further into the current world.
Yes, I do, because the main topic we'll be hitting on is, roughly speaking, referred to as transhumanism. And that's also AKA post-humanism and sometimes futurism, or the letter H with a plus sign next to it, denoting humanity plus. Okay, and that this is really a gigantic, complex, fascinating, frightening, interesting, and multifaceted topic. It's a very complicated one because it really can encompass a lot of different subjects, such as humans merging with technology, which you mentioned, human enhancements from that merging, up and downloading the contents of the human brain, genetic manipulation, what's known as ectogenesis, which is artificial wombs, nanotechnology, biotechnological implants, omni-surveillance, seeking immortality through high tech, cloning. I mean, you name it. It's all under the big transhumanist top. So that is a absolutely gigantic topic.
Yeah.
And so, yes, go ahead.
No, I was just gonna say, yeah, it's huge, and that's why there's so many videos out there talking about transhumanists and transhumanism. And so it's you can never fully grasp it in one, especially a 1 hour conversation, because there's so many different avenues. So I'm excited to have you on to talk about exactly what you've been researching and what you've been studying. So continue. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt.
No, not at all. Well, inevitably, what I notice is that transhumanism somehow always manages to involve high-tech, evolution, theology, and occultism. It's like a giant mishmash, and it's inevitable. So I'm working on a book at the moment about discussing the transhumanist themes in movies, and that comes up constantly. It's really just inevitable. So let's go back to what contextually, where the word transhumanism came from, which is from Julian Huxley's 1957 book, In New Bottles for New Wine. Hmm. Okay, I mean, that title alone is reminiscent of the New Testament, isn't
mm-hmm,
it?
Yeah.
And here's what he writes. I believe in transhumanism. Once there are enough people who can truly say that, the human species will be on the threshold of a new kind of existence, as different from ours as ours is from that of Peking man. It will at last be consciously fulfilling its real destiny. So now with that statement alone, there's so much there. For example, he ties it into evolution, right, with the reference to Peking man. He claims to know, if you notice at the end there, he claims to know what our real destiny is. We'll be consciously fulfilling our real destiny. So that's a huge claim right there. And he's looking forward to the human species being in the threshold of a new kind of experience, or existence rather. So that's why transhumanism is sometimes referred to as post-humanism, or humanity plus. And so what I like to do is look at it in terms of this really revolves around, if you can picture in your mind for a moment, the infamous Eliphas Levi depiction of Baphomet, right? On the arms of the forearms of Baphomet, there's two words written that are essentially alchemical, and they refer to solution and dissolution, or rather dissolution and solution, right? Coagulation. And that's really a big part of it. Is a big theme in transhumanism is deconstruction. Okay, there's something already there because we're not God. So there's something already there. We deconstruct it, and then we seek to reconstruct it in our own image. That is a huge theme. And so that ties into alchemy, where you're dissolving and then you're trying to come up with something new, for instance, base metals into gold, that kind of idea, which was more like chemistry, but mystically that's seen as a deconstruction of the human personality to create a new personality, you know, like, yeah. And so that's really what's behind all this, is to deconstruct God's created order and reconstruct it in our image, to the point where we're deconstructing our own bodies and reconstructing them in our own image, as well as creating, quote unquote, a new life in the form of artificial intelligence, right? Of which there's various kinds. Obviously, we already live with various kinds of artificial intelligence, but what they look for in the future is what's known as strong artificial intelligence, which would be self-aware, self-conscious. And that would be like the creation of a new life by human beings. So the reason that I know you mentioned Adam is because what we find in Genesis 2 is the Lord God formed man out of the dust of the ground and breathed into his nostrils the breath of life, and man became a living being. Okay? And incidentally, when one of my daughters was, I think, 7 or 8, she was trying to remember this text, and she finally hit upon it. She says, "Oh, yeah, yeah, God blew his nose." But the reason to touch upon the creation of Adam is that, well, what I refer to as the original rebellion took place within the mind of the then loyal cherub who thought, "I will be like the Most High," right? And so he then approaches Eve and he introduces that same concept to her. "You shall be like God," right? And that's really what has driven what I'm just going to generally refer to as occultism, I mean, by any other name, ever since, is how to be like God in various ways, right? So in the Bible, you could be like God in a good way. You know, "Be ye therefore holy as your Father in heaven is holy." Great. But being like God in terms of usurping God and taking his place, no. And so you see the different categories there. So Satan obviously meant it in replacing God. So I always say we should be like God in terms of emulation, not usurpation. Okay, but so what we see now, we're going to jump forwards to another topic that's gigantic, and that is the Jewish or rabbinic Jewish concept of the golem. And I say it's a gigantic topic because that's part of another book I'll be publishing soon where I researched the topic of the golem to ridiculous detail. And I found any time I thought I had my head wrapped around it, I'd find out, nope, I didn't quite get it. There's more and there's more and there's more and there's more. Partly because folklore has been written about the golem for centuries. So the amount of literature is just vast, absolutely vast, and people are still writing literature about it today. I mean, my kids were watching a little kids cartoon program called Arthur, and they had a segment on the golem. Like, what on earth?
Yeah.
I mean, it's all over the place. It was on the X-Files. It's just everywhere.
Yeah, well, before we get too much into it, yes, just to give everyone a very simplistic definition of it, it's from the originally from the Japanese culture. Maybe you've done more research, obviously, but from my understanding, it's originally from the Japanese culture way back when, and it's essentially little figurines, inanimate objects coming to life and being, you know, having some sort of being to them in the simplest form possible. Is that correct?
Yeah, see, I'm glad you mentioned that because, of course, if Satan is spreading an occultic concept to be like God, then he would do it to every culture. So there are various such tales in many different cultures of inanimate objects coming to life. Okay, in the rabbinic Jewish tradition, initially it seems that it was supposed to be part of the big sort of final test for a rabbi's mystical capabilities so that they would form just a basic human form out of dirt, and the rabbi would do his mystical incantations, and the very second the figure came to life, it would be returned to the dust whence it came, right? That was pretty much it. It was more like just a test. But yeah, that was the concept of doing exactly what God did in Genesis 2, is forming earth into a humanoid shape and bringing it to life. And then from there, of course, you get all kinds of different adaptations of the story that, you know, the golem was allowed to function as sort of like a chore boy, you know, doing all kinds of things around the house. But some would say, no, it wasn't allowed to be used like as a personal servant. It was meant really to protect the Jews in case times of persecution. And then you have the stories of female golems that have a romantic twist to them. And you name it. I mean, every kind of story has been done. And one of the variations also is that something was written on the golem's forehead to bring it to life. In some stories, it's the Tetragrammaton, and some stories, it's the word Emet, which means truth. And Emet is made up of one of the ways that Jews refer to God, which is the first, middle, and last letters of the Hebrew alphabet. And then when they wanted to be rid of the golem, when it was time to return it to dust, they would erase the last letter. They would erase the first letter, which is the Aleph, and then it would just say Met, and Met means death. But okay, so that's a variation. But basically, that's why we're mentioning Golem, because that is the story of how to be like God and literally bringing something that's not alive to life. Okay, and now if we think about that concept and we think about many different formats of storytelling over the years, all of a sudden you realize, man, this is all over the place. For example, a classic example is Frankenstein, right? Frankenstein is a golem tale. And interestingly enough, if you recall, the subtitle or the long title of the book Frankenstein is Or the Modern Prometheus. Okay, and Prometheus is basically, in Greek mythology, it's essentially like a Satan character who is actually looked upon pretty positively, because Prometheus stole fire from the gods against the will of Zeus, and he gave it to humanity. Well, we're super happy about that, because fire is an extremely important technology, but it is a fact that he did it by breaking the will of the gods, especially Zeus, who persecuted him because of that. So in that sense, Prometheus is seen as an enlightener, symbolically and literally, right? Literally because the fire brings light. But this is how you end up with depictions, again, going back to Baphomet. What's on Baphomet's head? It's what's known as a Promethean torch. It's literally a torch that's on fire on top of his head. And to denote this light giver, right? Light bringer, which is what the name Lucifer means. Of course, that's like a compound Latin term for the Hebrew, Hallel. Okay, same thing, light bearer, light bringer. It all ties together like that, right? And so in the story of Frankenstein, you know, for many years, of course, there have been about 100 movies made of Frankenstein. And I always thought, okay, I mean, it's a story about a rampaging monster. Usually there's really not much more to it than that. But just, I think last year, I actually went through the book and I was really blown away, because it is a deeply theological book. Very, very, very theological book, for sure. And one of the things that Victor Frankenstein, right, the actual name Frankenstein is not of the creature, it's the doctor. And one of the things he talks about is how initially he studied alchemists. And then he gets it into his head to create life. And I'm trying to find some quotations right now, because it's really very telling of the nature of the story. In the meantime, as I'm looking through some notes, I was reminded, if you think about Pinocchio, right, same kind of idea, right, a non-living entity being brought to life.
The idea of inanimate objects coming to life is just, in case people can't quite connect the dots on, hey, I thought we were talking about transhumanism. It's like, well, okay, we're talking about artificial intelligence, just we're talking about the mystical side and the more spiritual side of the coming transhumanistic overtone of the culture that's coming in the future.
Right, because it's easy when you talk about transhumanism to start talking about the key players in that movement and the technology. But what I'm thinking about is, okay, what's the worldview behind it, right? And why is it that it's constantly tied into theology, occultism, and evolution. It's inevitable. So why is that? So in this case, Victor Frankenstein, he states that his goal was the raising of ghosts or devils. And he refers to the spirits that I had invoked to aid me. The spirits of the dead hovered around and instigated me. I mean, you don't really usually hear that in a Frankenstein movie, right? That's part of the book, though. And then, so we find that there's this relationship that plays out in the book that's often references Genesis. It references Adam. It references the fall, because the creature views itself as being forsaken by its creator, and it wants a relationship with its creator. But, you know, various times through the book, Frankenstein refers to his creation as the demon, as a vampire, as devil, as archfiend, as my fiendish enemy, the daemon, cursed and hellish monster. You know, so the creature really feels itself very put off by the way that his creator treats him. So that's where you get really the plot of the story.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's way different than and almost any movie out there. That the actual book is so much deeper, and has, you know, it's not just a monster. Like the movies make it just to be a, you know, just a fighting monster movie, but in reality, the spiritual ramifications behind the book, you know, it speaks to a lot of truth that they're working towards even now.
That's right. So Frankenstein states, a new species would bless me as its creator and source. Many happy and excellent natures would owe their being to me. All right.
Yeah, that's becoming a god in his own eyes, for sure.
Yep, and he says, I considered the being whom I had cast among mankind, my own vampire, my own spirit let loose from the grave and forced to destroy all that was dear to me, a being whom I myself had formed and endued with life, my creation. So anyhow, that's some of the background into why it is that Frankenstein, or the modern Prometheus, is not only a golem tale at heart, but again, it's deeply high-tech, occultic, and evolutionary, and theological. I mean, it's all there. It's all there. So then, I know when I sent you an email, I think just today I mentioned, yeah, we're basically going from Adam to the golem to robots, androids, cyborgs, and artificial intelligence. Because what is a robot? Well, it's the same basic kind of idea, right? You're making a mechanical apparatus that, in the case of a robot, okay, it's not actually alive, but it's made to appear that way, right? I mean, it's made to perform certain human-like functions. Then when we talk about androids, that is a robot, but it's in the form of a human, right? It's an anthropomorphic robot. That's an android. So if you were to look at it, if it's built well enough, you'd think that it's a human, right? Like on Star Trek, you had Data. Data was an android. He could have used some makeup, though, you know, a little pale, but you do get all these ideas through fiction, literature, and movies about the concept that you'd have an android built so perfectly that you wouldn't be able to tell that it was an android. You'd think it was a human. And then beyond that, to the point that an android might itself not know that it's an android. It would itself think that it's a human.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And I know the big, very popular story about that would be Philip K. Dick's Do Androids Dream of Electric Sheep, which was made into the movie Blade Runner. Okay, however, there was a movie made before that that's called The Creation of the Humanoids. It's before that one, before he even wrote his story. And that movie is, I think to this day, this was the early 60s. To me, The Creation of the Humanoids is pretty much unmatched in its combination of, well, guess what? Evolution, theology, high tech. I mean, it's all there. And that movie also deals with that concept of androids who don't know they're androids, or androids who use the bodies of recently deceased humans to build androids. So you have basically a high-tech form of resurrection, in a manner of speaking. And they refer to, so the androids have to go to this building to recharge their batteries, literally. And they call it the temple. They call the main computer the mother father, or the father mother, right? I mean, so basically the androids begin developing their own theology. And it's really, really interesting. But again, this concept of being like God, creating a golem, whether it's out of dirt or whether it's out of metal, it's really the same basic concept, right? So then we move into cyborgs. Well, that's a human being that has technology embedded into them. Like, for instance, the $6 million man. Back in my day, that was the big android tale. Because what happened? Well, Steve Austin got in a really terrible accident, and he was rebuilt with bionic technology within him. So he was a cyborg, right?
Yeah, this topic, the cyborg idea, to me, is something that we are right, maybe not even around the corner. Like, we are in that age where people, you're going to start seeing people getting upgrades to their bodies just because it makes things more effective. The movie Ghost in the Shell is a perfect example of that.
Yes.
I can understand that way of thinking. Like, you can understand, like, oh, I wish I had better eyesight. Oh, there's technology now that makes me have better eyesight. There's no downside. Like, why wouldn't I do that? Or, oh, I can be stronger, you know, or I can just get like a metal arm and be stronger. Like, that type of thinking, like, you can understand why someone would get into that. And that's super dangerous, like, when you can see the reasoning behind it. And so that cyborg is definitely what we're coming into, for sure.
See, this gets into difficult issue, which is obviously we're doing this through high tech. We're having this discussion through high tech means. It's not like we're anti high tech.
Yeah.
We're just thinking about, well, how far would I go? And that's a difficult topic because notice I'm not saying how far should you go. I'm saying how far should I go? Mm-hmm. Because, for instance, there are people. Well, there's already people with artificial hips and artificial hearts and pacemakers, yeah, and all kinds of technology within them already. So in that sense, we need to be careful, because if we're both relatively healthy, it's easy to sit back and say, yeah, nobody should ever get anything like that. But then, okay, what if you're in really bad physical shape and some of these high-tech implants would help you? And so that's one part of the transhumanist movement, is that there's people involved in it who are doing really good work for people who have serious disabilities. For instance, Ray Kurzweil has been at it for quite a long time, and he's developed some great high tech for people who are hearing impaired and speech impaired, right? I mean, there's some very useful technology coming out of this movement. Although sometimes it's not really coming out of the movement. A lot of times what transhumanists will do is they'll look at the fields of artificial limbs, for instance, and then they'll just co-opt it. And then they'll turn it into like a transhumanist tool towards their own ends, right? Let me read you this quote from J.P. Morgan. He said, "A man always has two reasons for doing anything. A good reason and the real reason." And so that's really the difficulty, is where do we draw the line? And I think it's not as easy as you would think.
Yeah, well, I would even build off that point. Like, that's a great point. And it's almost like this transhumanist movement is the culmination of the longest Hegelian dialectic movement we know, with the, you know, with the pharmaceutical companies and the food companies destroying our bodies, you know, step by step with GMOs and the toxic waste and the water we drink and, you know, the chemtrails and all those different things you can get into. They're just trying to destroy our bodies, so we have to turn to these technologies, so that's the only way that we could become whole again or clean again. And so it's so I hear what you're saying. That's a great point, is, you know, where is that line? I think every person needs to decide now where your line is before you are all of a sudden unhealthy and you have to make a choice based on, you know, emotional reaction,
right? Like desperation.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. So again, that's why that's just one of the many things that makes this topic so incredibly complex and difficult. Because you could say, well, I'm going to go off the grid and I'm going to live off of the land and all that stuff. And that's great if you can, but especially most people living in a first world country don't even know how to water a house plant, much less live off the land, right?
Yeah.
So I just wanted to note one reason why sometimes you and I are mentioning fiction, right? Why are we talking about movies when we're supposed to be talking about real life? And that's obviously because when people write fiction, they inevitably have to write some of their own worldview into it. I mean, I know if I got to write a movie script, of course I would write part of my own real life worldview into it. How couldn't I? I mean, it would have to be so completely abstract if I didn't do that, that it would basically be a jumbled mess. It'd have no real meaning. And then if I actually set out to write a movie script or any kind of fiction that did not play off of my real life worldview at all, well, guess what? Then that would be my purpose. So my own purpose would still be within it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I mean, you think about something like Fritz Lang movie Metropolis, right? 1927. I mean, the movie is so old, it's a silent film. And yet, what's he depicting within it? An occultic scientist, by the way. The scientist has a gigantic upside-down pentagram in his lab who downloads the contents of a woman's brain and uploads them into a robot who then becomes an android. I mean, what? Where is he getting this stuff? I mean, like I said, it's a silent film. The technology wasn't even advanced enough to have sound go along with the picture. And yet this is what he's depicting. I mean, the most up-to-date high tech in 1927. I certainly don't know what he was into, but I do know he was living in Germany at the time, right around the rise of the Nazis, if that mm-hmm. means anything.
It definitely does.
And so we do find, for whatever reasons, that movie is incredibly influential. For instance, in the just to tie a little knot, in the video for the Queen song, Radio Gaga, you see the main singer, what's his name, Freddie? He is depicting himself in the video as that robot in the movie Metropolis. And then, of course, Lady Gaga gets her name Gaga from Radio Gaga, from that Queen song. So it's kind of crazy the way that these things go around and round and round. And so nowadays we have a super high-tech guy, like Elon Musk, telling us that we need to become cyborgs in order to survive artificial intelligence.
Yeah, he even used super interesting language when talking about that. He even made religious analogies to it, saying, hey, the demon of the artificial yes. intelligence is coming, so we just need to give into it and turn into cyborgs. Just super interesting.
Yeah, he has said, with artificial intelligence, we are summoning a demon. That's exactly the way he put it. And he talked about the basic Faustian tale, where you see the magician over the pentagram summoning a demon, and then Musk says, it didn't turn out well, did it? But again, it's like you said, it's a Hegelian dialectic where now we have to become cyborgs, right? So we create the problem, and then the solution is just part of the problem, really. And so, yeah, when we were having, I was having this computer issue, this computer problem today, you know, okay, let's say that I have all these high-tech implants in my body and part of it is running my brain. What's going to happen with these bugs? I mean, what's going to happen when you have malfunctions? I mean, what's going to happen when it's actually your brain, not just an external hard drive?
Yeah, or even worse, when you get you get eye implants and then all of a sudden the government hacks in and shuts your eyes down because you're breaking the laws that they set up in this utopian Agenda 2030 or Agenda 21 situation that we're now stuck in.
Yeah, in fact, there's a TV show called Black Mirror, and one of the episodes got very, very close to that, where people had eye implants, and if somebody wanted to block you, they would literally appear to you like a gray, you know, amorphous form, and then the voice would be all muddled. So in real life, if you're standing 1 foot away from another person, they could do that to you for however long they wanted to keep you blocked. And so, yeah, and then there's a concept of everything's hackable, right? Everything's hackable in one way or another. And so how do you know what the program that you're allowing to be uploaded into your body, what's really in it? Who really has ultimate control? What could they do with it? Who could hack it? It's, again, this is just an enormous topic. And not to mention, who could write the perfect program that you could literally embed in your body and not have any of these problems? Who could write it but, I guess, a strong artificial intelligence? So it's kind of like a giant loop, right?
Yeah.
It's another Hegelian Ouroboros eating its own tail. It's just round and round it goes.
Yeah, it's one of those things that it's really interesting to talk about, and it's so easy to turn it into, oh, all these evil things are coming, and some people listening to this may be like, it's so far-fetched that it can't possibly be true. But there are laws on the books right now preparing us for how to deal with cyborgs and how to deal with H+ and how to deal with AI. I mean, the laws are being put in place to prepare us for this next step. It's you know, the culture is starting to turn to that, and politics is always downstream from culture. So we have to start to prepare ourselves for how are we going to handle these situations.
Yeah, in fact, it would be pretty easy to say, you guys are just kind of fear-mongering or whatever, because nothing like that is happening today. Yeah, okay, but it's a good time to start thinking about it, isn't it?
Yeah, well, and it's not even that. I mean, some of it is happening today. You know, I just read an article where a company in the UK is planning to put chips inside their employees' hands to, you know, just make work checking in and out easier, to keep locations on them, to, you know, do those things. And that's the first step. And then, and we've already talked about, you know, people getting replacement limbs, and where is the line there? So it's literally happening today.
That is, it is already happening with some companies. And then you think about whatever anybody's opinion might be about Alex Jones, when you think about the fact that he can't even do e-commerce anymore like he used to, right? How easy would it be to get a person in this age when cash is almost not used anymore? How easy would it be to put a person into a situation where it's like, well, you play into the system or you're done. You can't buy or sell.
Yeah. I mean,
very simple.
Talk
right?
about religious overtones with that. Hey, you know,
yeah,
talking about revolution.
So, I mean, when I see kids that are in baby strollers with a cell phone in their hand, it's like, oh boy, how fast did that happen?
Yeah.
I mean, seriously, how quickly did that happen? When I go to my kids' soccer games, and, you know, at the end of the soccer game for kids, all the parents go in the field and we form a little tunnel and high five everybody. And it's like the game's over. Hello, parents. Can you put your phones down for literally 30 seconds and notice that the game is over and then actually get off your chairs and come to the field for like 1 minute? Would that be too much of a – but, you know, we're like a high-tech zombie society here. And And kids already have artificial intelligence babysitters, you know, go to your room and engage with your high-tech device. You know, go talk to Alexa or whatever all those new fandangled devices are. What is it? Alexa is one, and what's the name of it? Siri?
Siri, yeah.
All those. You know, I'd like to put those together in a room and just let them have a conversation and see what happens.
No, then they take over the world. They learn from each other. You're doing us all with that. Don't do that.
But so, yeah, even if you think of something like, okay, think about something as occultic as a Ouija board. There is some sort of correlation between that and having a conversation with Alexa or Siri, you know. It may not be at the same sort of, it's not exactly the same context, but I think there is something similar between the two. So here's an interesting, I'm hearing bells. Okay. Here's some interest, an interesting statement by Isaac Asimov. I wonder if we will make robots so much like men and men so much like robots that eventually we'll lose the distinction altogether and have a combined culture. This may be the best after all. Maybe humanity itself will die out as humanity and sort of melt into this machine culture. And boy, if we're not there already, you know, you have people who are raised in such dysfunctional non-families that, well, there's a lot of people, I think of them as being functionally sociopathic, not psychopathic, but sociopaths. You know, yes, they have emotions, but they're very surface level. You know, you try to engage them in this slight little bit of conversation, and it's almost like they're just incapable of connecting to a real life human being who's standing in front of their face. So make men so much like robots, right? And in the meantime, we make robots so much like men. I remember a news story about a car company that has an artificial intelligence that'll interact with you through texting. And so when you're looking for a car, you know, they tell you, oh, you can start texting us, and we start discussing what kind of car you want. So by the time you get here, we're pretty much set on what you want to buy. And that this artificial intelligence had even been programmed to make spelling errors and things like that to make it seem more human-like, to the point where people would get to the auto dealership and say, oh, I want to meet so-and-so. You know, we've been having these discussions. It's been great. And they're like, there's no such person. That's a machine.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's insane that we can, you know, live at that point. So as we're talking about this, you know, obviously coming from a spiritual perspective, talking about the transhumanist movement today, it's important that to understand that when you start to take on these different technologies, you are giving yourself into those spiritual ideas as well. And so I like talking about these stuff, but it's not as productive of as a conversation as it can be if we don't talk about what can we do about it now, and how do we prepare ourselves now for this coming revolution?
To tell you the truth, there's a certain point where you think, okay, just how much of a god of this world is Satan, and how much will it take to redeem it? And this may be this may not seem like the kind of answer we're supposed to be looking for when we're talking about high tech, and especially high tech takeovers of humanity or remodeling humanity. But I think it all comes down to, obviously, number one is everything breaks down into spiritual warfare, and we need to be walking with the Lord, right? I mean, the Messiah, Jesus, obviously. But secondly, I think is the building and maintaining of strong families, right? That might seem like it's uncontextual, but when you think about it, one reason many people turn obsessively to high tech is because high tech offers them something that the person next door or the person within their own home doesn't, which is instant availability right? Instant feedback, instant, hey, whatever you want, I got it for you. Instant interaction, never turn you down, you know, unless you have the kind of high tech problems I was having today.
Yeah.
but it is very much of a virtual relationship. And that's why it's so easy to start thinking in terms of people having a relationship with androids, because they're literally at your beck and call. And what better way to be as God than to have a being whom you are in complete control over, right? You don't have to romance it and treat it nicely and control yourself and be a servant to it and love it. You just command X, okay, boom, command it. Go, you know. And so, yeah, in my mind, the big picture is what's been on the globalist books for a long time has been the destruction of the family, because that is what leads to broken, hurting people who have no one else to turn to but whom. Well, depends. In some cultures, they turn to the government, right? Like in communist cultures where, well, there is no God. It's an atheist culture. So what is more powerful and bigger than yourself? Well, it's the government, right? So in our culture, it's more like high tech. We turn to high tech for our relationships. You know, a friend is somebody who clicked a button and I can interact with, and if I ever get tired of you, I just block you and delete you and you're gone. And then, so what? I got 500 other quote-unquote friends.
Yeah, and all these relationships are through someone else's lens. You know, someone else gets to filter who sees what or who you're interacting with. And all of your, you know, relationships are built on someone else's platform. You know, talk about controlling. That's exactly what it is. And so getting back to the real life interactions like you talked about is so important. And it's something that it just, you can see the degrade of our society based yes. on not having personal interactions anymore. And it's sad. It really is.
Yeah, for instance, I've been involved with Christian apologetics for a long time, and I'm constantly trying to put events together, you know, seminars, conferences, lectures, and it's very, very difficult because even when I tell my own friends, hey, I'm lecturing somewhere, the first thing they'll ask me is it going to be online? Right? They don't want to bother to take time out of their day to go to a location and be there when the event is happening, right? They want to just do it on their own time. And so I remember I was talking about putting on such an event with a gentleman who's in his 70s, and he said, oh, but I like going to the events. I like looking at the book table for resources. I like talking to people. I like asking questions of the lecturer. I said, yeah, I know. That's you and your generation. Yeah, exactly. But this generation isn't like that. So what happens is, those events just barely happen anymore because, for instance, we had a couple years ago, Jonathan Sarfati was brought into town from Creation Ministries International. And for a guy who's that well known, who's been at it for decades and who's quite brilliant, and the place was maybe 1/4 full. And I thought, okay, who's going to do that next year? Who's going to put up the money to fly Jonathan from out of state, put him up in a hotel room and pay for his meals and give him a little little extra on the side? I mean, who's going to do that? It just comes down to economics at some point. And when people don't want to show up to these events, then they just go away and they don't happen anymore. So then what? Well, then you got to live online and you have to live stream everything. And then, like you were just saying, then you run into the issue of that you're playing on someone else's court, right? You're playing someone else's game, and if they want to delete your content, they delete it. And so then what are you left with?
Yeah. Oh, so make sure you comment below and tell me what you think. Anyway.
Yeah, give us ideas, because ultimately I do see a strong family as being a big part in this. And unfortunately, strong families are what have been just falling by the wayside right and left. And that's the fault of heterosexuals, and that's the fault of LGBTQIAP plus people. It's everybody's fault. We've all playing a role in just chasing our own desires. And so if it's inconvenient for us to have a traditional family, well, too bad. And that too bad leads to a generation of youngsters who are growing up, generally living out of a suitcase between two feuding parents, even if they know both of the parents. And the parents are constantly having their most recent sex partner come into their lives. And so the child starts building a relationship with them, but then all of a sudden they're gone, and then the next sex partner comes into their life. So consciously or not, the child starts learning, well, I don't want to build an emotional relationship with somebody that's a deep relationship because I always end up getting hurt, right? They always end up just going away. And so even if it's not a conscious choice, it's a fact that they never have the ability really to develop deep emotions and deep relationships. So that leads to a culture of functioning sociopaths raising the next cult that I mean generation, raising the next generation of functioning sociopaths, so that this is pretty much where first world countries are right now. Is part of it is also the inevitable result of being purposefully dumbed down, right? Because you and I, we can sit here and we don't have to bother with all the time-consuming and head-aching research that we do. We can just say, hey, this is how I feel about it. How do you feel? Oh, I feel this way. And if I feel something, then it must be true. And so we end up making decisions about our lives and very important issues from theology to politics and everything else in between based on feelings and emotions, because everybody has those. You don't have to have a good intellect to feel something. And then all you have to do is say, hey, I feel something, therefore it's true. And if you say something that emotionally offends me, then you should be persecuted. I mean, it's a wreck. It's an absolute train wreck. So we end up with a culture that says 3D reality, yeah, that's old-fashioned. You know, you can't look at a person and know what they are anymore. It's what they, how they self-identify. That's what matters. Right? It used to be if it walks like a duck and quacks like a duck and looks like a duck, it's a duck. But now it's if it looks like a duck, quacks like a duck, walks like a duck, it's whatever it self-identifies as being. Right?
Yeah. Well, it's you know, the society trending towards people becoming more like bricks and less like stones is definitely happening. But at this point, you know, I always do want to. You know, my worldview is definitely a Genesis 50-20 worldview where, you know, whatever Satan intended for evil, God can use for good so that the multitudes will be saved. And I think we see that a lot with technology is there's a lot of really good aspects of technology, and I don't want to downplay those in our conversation because especially being a younger person growing up in a world of technology, I've seen, you know, being able to stay in contact with people who are far away, having shows like this when we can talk about these ideas, you know, the ability to spread the gospel much farther and faster because of the way the technology has grown is something that cannot be understated. And so I don't want to turn into a this all this stuff sucks, all technology is bad, but to have a responsible understanding of where Satan is pushing us with this technology, but also, you know, keeping in mind how we can use a lot of technology for the good. Now, when it comes to you know, taking the mark of the beast, there's no way that that's going to be turned for good, and that's where we have to figure out where that line is, right? But, you know, we can use, you know, social media platforms to connect with people that we haven't talked with a long time, or you know, connect with the people listening to this program, which I love to do. But that can't be your primary your main focus. That can't be the only way you're getting interaction with people. That can't be the way you see your world is through someone else's eyes. You have to go out there and live it yourself and break free from technology and live your life, but still understand that its importance in our culture.
Amen. And let me just mention one thing. Okay, so I'm a pretty hardcore introvert. All right, that means that I generally like to keep to myself. And it's not because I'm stuck up or angry or arrogant or anything. It's just the way I'm built. You know, if I'm at a party, I'm more happy in the corner just contemplating the texture of the wallpaper. You know, that's just me. No big deal. But at one point in my life, I realized all introversion all the time, that doesn't work. So now I call myself a liberated introvert. So for instance, yeah, at a get together, I would still tend to be all alone and quite happily so. But I can get in front of a room full of people and present a lecture for an hour, no problem. But part of that is because I've forced myself to not be the way I naturally was. So for instance, last night, I hosted a table at a get together for foreign students for Thanksgiving. And my son, he's told me, "Oh, I'm a little socially awkward too." I said, "I know because I am as well." But see, I do things like that on purpose because I know it's uncomfortable for me to sit at a table not only with perfect strangers that I'm supposed to interact with, but who are foreigners and might have a difficult time communicating. That is completely uncomfortable for me. I would not just naturally do that, but I force myself to do that because it is difficult and because I know it's something that I should be doing. It's just going beyond my comfort zone. And so, yeah, so when you're at the line waiting for your, mocha lattuccino or whatever at Starbucks, maybe turn your phone off for 30 seconds and look at the person next to you and say, "Hey, how you doing?"
Yeah, and then leave Starbucks and never go back because it's a terrible company. But anyway, I get your point.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not a coffee snob, so give
No.
me the 50-cent cup and I'm perfectly happy. I don't need to pay $5 for a cup of coffee. But anyhow, right. So use technology for the means that it's useful for, but don't forget that human touch. I mean, there are a lot of people out there who are extremely lonely, and plugging into a computer actually doesn't help them because they're built differently than a high-tech zombie generation, and they need an interaction and they need the human touch. So, yeah.
Absolutely. I think is such an important way to, I think, end this conversation as our hour comes to a conclusion. There's definitely so much more like we talked about that we could
Definitely.
dive into the transhumanist aspect, but I guess a good way to put it is it's going back to being human. You have that's how you combat
Right.
transhumanism. You have to go back to being human and interacting with humans and living in the world that God created and not living in someone else's world. So before I let you go, where can people find you? How can they support you? And what do you have coming up? You mentioned a book.
Right. My website is truefreethinker.com, one giant word, true free thinker. And I made it user friendly. So if you go there to the homepage, you'll find everything. You know, I don't have to give a 10-minute talk about Twitter this and Facebook that and YouTube the other and Amazon the other. It's all there. So just visit me at truefreethinker.com. And I appreciate you letting me mention that. Yeah, what I have coming up is I actually ended up writing two books in a row that touch upon transhumanist issues. And I'm done with one, but it hasn't been published yet, and I'm writing the other one right now. So the first one is very much like what we talked about today, where I go from Adam and Genesis to the Golem to transhumanism in terms of the high-tech stuff. And then the other one that's been a lot of fun is the one where I point out different transhuman elements in movies. And that one's been as much fun as it is sobering, like I said, because it's unbelievable how come it's always the same. It's always high-tech occultism, theology, and evolution. It's almost like inevitable that transhuman stories will contain, if not all four of those aspects, three.
Yeah, well, definitely go check his stuff out, guys. If you enjoy this conversation, like I said, we have another one from about a year ago that was fantastic, and I'm sure we'll have another one in the future. So, Ken, thank you so much for coming on the Sharpen Your Port. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Samuel, for having me, and I appreciate your audience and definitely support Samuel and the Sharpening Report.
Thank you. And like I said, guys, you know, we talked a lot about internet community and how they can maybe not be the best thing, but I really do value talking to you guys in the comments. Like I said, hopefully even maybe this video will be have the premiere future where I can sit and talk with you guys during the actual conversation. I don't know. We'll see if it works out that way. It's got a busy week, but it's about going back to being human. Like we talked about, you have to break free from technologies, put your phone down, put the computer down, stop listening to doom and gloom podcasts, stop listening to great podcasts every once in a while. Take some time out in the creation that God has made, because it is beautiful and is glorious and it is what he has designed us to live in. So make sure you take your time to find some peace and rest from all that, and connect with your creator so that you will have a fulfilling life. As the Sharpening Report continues to grow, and I'm always trying to figure out which direction God wants me to go, it can be really tempting for me to go in different directions, maybe more politically focused, maybe stepping away from the spiritual aspects. But I, you know, God has continually put it on my heart that this is a Christian-based show where I'm always going to talk about the gospel. So make sure, if you're listening to this and you're not a Christian and you're not sure about the whole Christian world, make sure that you read scripture and you really do your research on what Jesus has to offer for you. His relationship is what will save you. It will never be technology. It will never be the knowledge that you acquire. It'll never be whatever you can do. It's always going to be your relationship with Jesus Christ. I just felt like that was on my heart to say that at the end of this episode for some reason. So, you know, I don't know. Something God put on my heart is just to stay faithful in him through all things. So that's what I got. I hope you guys enjoyed the show. I'm not going to ask you to like, subscribe, or share, but, you know, I appreciate it if you do. I hope you enjoy the show, and I hope that you have a great week. You have a joke that you like?
Yeah, I'll tell you one that's kind of cultural for me since I'm a Jew. So okay. Sometimes we've told it to Gentiles, me and my Jewish friend Steven, they don't get it. But okay, so this homeless man comes up to a Jewish grandma and says, "Lady, I haven't eaten in 3 days." And she says, "Force yourself."
I hope everyone can get that joke.